free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free! Welcome. We are joined this week by a very special guest. Coming back from the big smoke, down in land and tan, we are joined this week by the effervescent Stephen Watt. Stevie boy, how you doing?
Oh, I wasn't looking effervescent at about 25 miles on Sunday. What's the opposite word of effervescent?
I've no idea, but we'll figure that out before the end of this episode. It's only right. We spent a good wee while in the previous weeks talking about you. Late call-up for London, but we'll speak about that as well. But we spoke a wee bit about how that came about and want to find out more about that, but also find out how the whole experience was. So, first of all, give us the context of you participating in the London Marathon 2024.
So, as we've well documented in the podcast, I've not been with my wee niggly troubley issues over the last year, actually, when I think about it. And I was keen to do something in springtime. And I was humming and hawing over what event to enter. And then an opportunity arose. A door opened, John. And you helped boot it open a wee bit, to be fair, because it's one of John's contacts, one of his many networks who the opportunity arose from. The place was first offered up to you, the London Marathon place, but of course for you it was the week before a certain race on the West Highland Way, and maybe a bit much, so you almost went, I think I said to you, well, if you're not doing it, I'll bring in, to use Iona Mackay's dialect dictionary word, bringe. So yeah, fortunately I also have been introduced to the fixer, shall we call him. And I went, I'll do the London Marathon in 6 weeks' time. I am on it. Yeah.
So let's go back a wee bit. Prior to London, your previous outing was that Chicago?
Malaga,
of course. Chicago and then Malaga. Malaga was what, late November, early December?
Early December, yeah.
Okay. So you're in a sort of recovery mode. You're a good dude in Malaga. Well, good dude with your pals as well. So, but you're then in sort of recovery mode from that marathon.
Yeah.
And you always are ticking over, keeping fit, going out and running. You do run clubs. So you're always being active, but no training with anything specifically in mind. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it was actually pretty pleased with how I was after Malaga, and in terms of my Achilles pain, I was coping with it, and it was grand. And I think when that place came up for London, I looked back at my consistency over the previous sort of 12 weeks, and I thought to myself, I'm actually running all right, I'm feeling all right, but I wasn't running with any purpose. I was doing what a lot of people maybe do when they're aimlessly kind of in between events and humming and hawing what to do, and doing quite a lot of junk miles, which for me, I've almost got a place there. So it's okay sometimes just to do miles for the sake of it without them being purposeful miles. They are purposeful miles, of course they are. You're out there doing what you love and enjoying it to a degree, because there's no the sort of pressure going with it. So junk miles, didn't discount them, everybody. Okay. But as well as that, I also knew that I work better and when I've got that goal. So I was like, that, right, 6 weeks, that'll give me a nice wee, you know, four week kind of a structure, and then a couple of weeks taper. Yeah. Of course. Oh, sorry. Go, John.
No, just going on your junk miles, but we're calling it junk miles. But after a marathon, you're marathon fit. You know what I mean? You've had that training block before. You've got that marathon fitness, but you're running without, as you say, without any pressure. it's time to just enjoy being fit. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? But you were, now you were saying 4 weeks training, focused training, and then 2 weeks taper. How was your Achilles throughout that period?
I'll get to that. Just had a thought when you were saying something there that, yeah, you're well trained. You're running kind of just for the enjoyment of running. And I like that. And I called it junk miles. For some people, that is maybe glorious miles. That's all they ever aim for. Yeah. And that's okay. It's kind of different strokes for different folks. And some people need discipline all the time and structure all the time. And I focus all the time. And that's what gets them out the door. Other people never need that at all. And they absolutely thrive on the whole randomness of, you know, going for a run and deciding when they get out the door what way the wind's going, what they're going to do. I'm someplace in between, I feel. And I like the discipline or a structured training block, but I also like the decompression of a unstructured number of weeks training. That's what I think my takeaway is. Takeaway, check me.
Structured training block. Who designed that for you? Was it self-designed?
It was self-designed for this. It was pretty much just that, get out 5-6 times a week, try and do a tempo session on one of those days, try and do a hill session on one of those days, 3 easy runs, a long run and a recovery run. There's 6. There's a very unstructured, structured
training week. There'll be folk rewinding that, writing that down, and saying that's what got Stevie Boy that time in London. That'll do me. We're not saying everybody couldn't do that in a 6-week period. So
you're looking at Training Peaks. You're not adhering to. You've got that person looking over your shoulder, but you know and I think I've acquired that from having a few structured training blocks. That the essence of it is this: I know to go to the next level. What I'd also need to do, and I'd need somebody looking over my shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
it
was enough. So Achilles wise, that's what you were. That's what you were asking next before I jump back. Sorry.
Okay. Jump around. House of Pain, baby. Let's do it.
It's on the playlist already. So, 6 weeks ago, I says I'll do that. 5.5 weeks ago, my Achilles started louping again.
I remember us talking. Your face never looked like it looked right now. You were fucking deflated, man.
I was raging. And I don't know if it was just because I'd done my first purposeful tempo session with a marathon in mind. Mm. And that tempo is one of the triggers for a flare-up in my Achilles, I found. Yeah?
Okay.
So it could have been that because I now had a goal, I was more focused on that tempo session than I had been. And I was pushing a wee bit harder and I maybe pushed it a wee bit too much on the very... I don't know. I'm just surmising.
It's a good word. It's a good word. So did you receive treatment on said Achilles?
Yeah, it was almost like I ran a tempo on a Tuesday. I woke up on a Wednesday morning and both my Achilles were going screaming, going, what you just done to us, mate? So I thought to myself, inaction is no good. Just at this moment. So I got in touch with Johnny at Physio Effect and arranged to go through and see him the first time I could the following week and got some shockwave on it. And then I backed off the running. I ran low mileage at low effort.
Yep.
But I didn't stop running because I think when I did that before, when I stopped running entirely, it didn't help it at all. So I've kind of found that you need to keep on trying to load up the Achilles and just manage the pain level. So if it's 5 out of 10 or less, it's okay. If it's not getting worse as the days go by, it's okay. Whereas if it's getting nippy, then you hate to kind of pull it back. So I did that, and I think I'm quite proud with how I coped with it this time, John.
My question that's in burning in my head is, was it the same as, similar to, the last time? Was it identical?
Yes, it was identical. Right, and last time, curtailed me for about 46 weeks. And so when it happened, I thought to myself, shite, that would be 46 weeks. That's the little marathon training block I was having. So yeah. Now I think I missed one long, and it was a crucial long run I missed. It was the weekend the Anglo-Celtic plate, when I was kind of hobbling about a wee bit. Folk might say that that's pretty much how I look when I'm running all the time, but I was actually hobbling about. So yeah, and my mileage dropped, my weekly mileage dropped, my set number of sessions dropped, and the intensity of the sessions dropped. But that was how I chose to cope with it, based upon how I had maybe made mistakes in the past.
So lessons learned from previous experiences.
Yes.
Bringing that in.
Brilliant. So yeah, got the shockwave, and that had a positive effect as well, the shockwave therapy. You know, got a wee bit more disciplined again when my heel raises, get the blood flow into the said problem areas. And yeah, I think I was then able to pick up and the weekend after, do a 15-mile run as a bit of a tester. And it's always the acid test is the next morning. And yeah, the Achilles were sore, they were kind of throbbing, but they weren't any worse.
The 15-mile run, was that the one doing in Ouija Land along the canal?
No. That was my last, that was just last weekend, the weekend before. That was my last paper run. So yeah, no, it was just a out and back in Ochterarda. So yeah. And then I think I did 18 the following week, and then 21 the following week after that. So I was only in the 20s once.
I'll get to this question in a wee bit. So you've been to London. How many times now have you run the London Marathon?
That was my third time.
Third time. Okay. And this is the question I was going to ask a minute ago. I never pushed you about a time or expectations for London prior to that, but are you in a position to share your thoughts now, post-marathon?
Oh, aye. I was probably always in a position to share my thoughts pre-marathon as well, if somebody had asked me.
Long silence. Moving on.
So my idea was that it was just to try to do progressive marathons progressively better for Chicago onwards. Yeah.
Remind me of Chicago time.
3:30, almost on the nose in Chicago. And then Malaga was 3:22:53.
Okay. What was London? Let's let the cat out of the bag. Folk Ken anyway.
Yeah, 3:22:19.
Oh, so you go. Progression, baby.
34 seconds.
Aye. Different circumstances, though. Different circumstances. I know you're a watcher of the weather. Mm-hmm. How was the weather on Sunday?
The weather was cold. Fair. Chilly. Bit breezy. No, the worst wind direction.
Because I was listening to who's that commentator? Gabby Logan. She'd moved for the start to the mile, and she was talking. And they were talking, it was at a time when they were showing the elite runners, the elite female runners. And they were talking about there being a wind and how it might affect things. And I've got to say something as well, on the TV coverage, you watch Boston, you watch Chicago, you said this before yourself, they show you the elites and didn't really worry about the rest of the pack. London's brilliant, man. The coverage of London is quite phenomenal. They do focus on the elites, that's where it's happening. Yeah. But then you've got someone like another 3 hours after it, with everybody coming in. It's really, and where they position themselves on the mile, speaking to the winners and speaking to guests, you've got all these club runners and normal folk like us coming in the background, coming down the mile. It's quite a spectacular finish. Sorry, I've lost the plot. Weather was fine for you, though. Never impacted on your performance, you think?
I wouldn't say so. It wouldn't have been able to get used as an excuse, shall we say. But it was markedly cold at the start line.
What did you hear on at the start? You didn't vest at the start, or did you something on?
So I was in the yellow start at Blackheath, and it's quite a calm start, actually, for a marathon. Do you know, I'll say this repeatedly, the execution of the London Marathon as an event is second to none. Right? I've not been in an event of that scale that eclipses that by some distance, right? So fair fucks to them, right? They've got it done to a well-oiled machine, right? But it was Blackheath. So you had a drop bag and the trucks are there, you know? But the trucks were just about 30 metres that way. The start line was about 20 metres that way. And the pens were all well organised. Everything was good. So you were able to keep a layer on rather than a throwaway until almost 10 minutes before your start time. My start time was like 10:04. So at 5 to 10, I went over to the truck with my drop bag, took my hoodie off, stuck it in the drop bag, walked over to my pen, in the pen for 10 minutes with just my vest on.
Getting body heat off fucking that.
Aye, and kind of you're all curried in together. Aye. So the wind chill wasn't quite getting you, whereas when Blackheath is almost the highest point at Greenwich, do you know, and it's quite exposed. It's the highest point of the course. You know, it's doing healthy there, kind of.
The thing I love about London, and I commented on this on Sunday when I was watching it on TV, I was saying, see all the trucks taking up these bags? They're in the exact same formation on the mile when you finish. So there's that familiarity of that too. You know exactly where you're going to go and get your gear. You know?
It's pretty epic stuff. Yeah. So the start, and also the last thing on the start, my running compadres, travelling buddies and stuff like that, we were all in the same yellow start. So we were able to hang about together and hey, pre-match nerves together and all that kind of jazz, which was raw.
That makes a difference, doesn't it, to be with people. How was your Saturday night?
Saturday, we travelled down Saturday morning. We had to end up flying down. We'd been booked on the train, but then the LNER staff, I'm not sure what faction of staff, trade union or whatever, decided to go on strike that Saturday. So the train down got cancelled just about a week before, which is every sympathy for people who I'm not getting the paying conditions they deserve. But see, when it affects you, you're like, fuck sake. So we had to book a flight down, flew down to Luton, and then got into straight from Luton, straight to the expo, got your numbers, and then we were staying in an Airbnb. We in walking distance of the finish line, actually. No being a flash Harry, because it wasn't massively expensive.
Was it a shared thing? Three or four of yous?
Aye, three of us were in there. So that was fine. But then we got to the expo, got the numbers, got a wee bit of the buzz. New Balance need to up their game with their merch, by the way. Pretty average offerings. I wasn't parting with nae cash. Whereas, you know, usually I'm a wee bit of sucker for, you know, a memento.
But anyway, definitely.
So yeah, and also at the expo, whilst we're on it, I went to the on stand to check to see if Amanda Woodrow was there, because she was working at it.
I seen her social medias last week. She was going down for like Wednesday or Thursday to get all set up. Did you manage to catch her?
No, she'd been reassigned duties elsewhere to some hipster hangout where they had a pop up or something like that. So she wasn't there. I was gutted. But anyway, that was. Yeah, they knew of Amanda at the stand, and I was saying, give her a shout for me. So, yeah, that was the expo. Again, all done, good. Nae much queuing, nae much dicking about, in, out.
It's taken me quite a while. We've had this back to ask about Scran. What was your pre-match the night before Scran?
Saturday night, we went to one of these sort of food truck places, you know, the type of thing at Vauxhall Bridge it was, that had a ton of, I say a ton, maybe about 12 different, it was under the arches of the railway, you know, it was all in there and it was dead. It was quite cool. I could have just absolutely got blitzed there and no bothered with the marathon, if I'm dead honest. But I had wood-fired pizza kind of thing. So pizza and a garlic bread chaser.
Fantastic. To yourself?
Italian sausage, if you were, I know you were going to ask. Italian sausage, mushroom, and fennel.
Was it for the sharing?
I think we shared a few wee bitties, but I made sure it was just my wee bit that got offered up for sharing, and I took the big bit of somebody else's.
Oh, yes.
Nay.
You can take the boy out of North Nairn, but you'll never take the North Nairn out of the boy.
Nay flies on me. So it was actually worked out perfect because it was just a wee stroll for where we were staying, which was dead near MI6, you know, the the spy place, which was, yeah, it's a good spot.
Oh, cool.
We did go for a run before tea.
I noticed that.
It wasn't really in my agenda, but the others were keen to go for a run. I think they were maybe, I don't know, want to stretch their legs.
Is that just like a wee nervy shakeout, just to relax things?
Exactly that. Yep. So we did go for a run. And then we got back to the apartment. I'm like, fuck, I wonder how many steps I've done today.
Go on then.
Back, I guess.
I'm going to go 14,000.
Higher.
Oh, you're 18.
23.
Oof. Man,
I know. And then you think to yourself, all the advice you give other folks, I remember trying to get off your feet the day before the marathon. But see, when you're flying and going to expo and then you decide to run, and that's before you know it. So,
but you know what? Coming off your flight, going to the expo and back to your digs, there's probably 4,000 or 5,000 steps in there, you know, easy.
By the time we'd done the expo and all that stuff and got back to the house, it was sitting at 13,000. And that was almost inadvertent steps that, well, if you had to make them. No, even getting public transport and everything everywhere.
What time were you at the expo and how busy was it?
We were there at about 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
2:00, round about then. And it was busy, but it wasn't stowed out.
That's good. We should say, for folk listening in for the first time, maybe listening to this podcast or listening to anything to do a marathon, Expo is where you go and pick up your bib number. And it's really well organised. You've got all the brands are there trying to entice you to get your care out and spend a bit of dough.
Definitely. But,
and there's plenty of photograph opportunities and stuff. It's really, really well done.
It's a good buzz. The only thing is that you have to go. We're London and the other majors. You have to go. You can't, you know, avoid going. Well, you can. You can get somebody to pick up your number for you if you give them like ID and all that.
You've got to fill in loads of forums. That's like working at MI6. You've got to do that.
It is. So you're better to go. And it's no dead convenient. Although the new Elizabethan tube line makes it a lot more easy than dicking about on the Dockland light.
I've not experienced that. That's a new thing.
Yeah. So it was fine. Okay. It was fine. But yeah, it's go and enjoy it and try and not do 23,000 steps.
Nah.
Fine marathoner, which sleep. I'm not.
Sleep well Saturday night? Good rest?
Pretty reasonable. Yeah, pretty reasonable. Usual. No, up a few times during the night to deal with hydration issues.
Yes.
You know how it is. But generally all right. And we made our way out to the start line via a London Bridge, you know, get the train to Blackheath. And again, oh, that's, you know.
Mm-hmm. I love that bit of it. Because everybody's going about and folk are in all sorts of wearing different things to try and keep warm. But you can just sense the anticipation of the day and the excitement is a fantastic buzz.
You can smell the anticipation of the day. There are a few wee dicky tummies.
I bet there was.
Right. Right. You're on the train, you're like, right, a bit of nervous excitement going on in here. So, yeah, but it was fine. It was untroubled.
Untroubled and eventful is exactly what you want. And always better when it's fair as well. Before the start, you're not be walking about in the rain, so it's good that it was fair. Cool. Very important point for me about Blackheath and at the start of London Marathon. What about the lavies? Was there plenty? It's easier for the guys, eh? Because they have like these big, massive urinal things they can do in there, don't they? So easier if you just want a pee, isn't it?
Yeah. Fine. I'd taken care of business. by that
good
point.
Lad.
I
good
just
lad.
Needed a quick whiz pre startup. So we were A-okay, John.
And you said just
at that point.
Yeah. And you said your start time was scheduled for 10:04. Does that mean you actually got a start?
Pretty much bang on the money. I was maybe a bit later because I didn't go to the front of the pen just because I was trying to contain myself. So I was probably about 10:08 by the time I got on the start line, but the pen started moving at 10:04.
Did you get to clamp eyes on Jasmine Paris? And she started the elite ladies race. Was she shifted away by that time?
Yes, there was no sign of Jasmine. I think she was potentially at a different start.
Okay. Yeah. Different places. Because I know, was it Dame Kelly Holmes did the start as well, yes. Didn't she? So, yeah. And then you pretty soon when you get on the course, there's noise right away, isn't there, for the people standing at the sidelines?
It's brilliant. It's a massive attraction of going back and doing London again for me. You know, a pool, it's a massive pool. Because the first time I did London was with John in 2018. And I did it to say something special with John. And we did say something special.
We did.
Very special. We shared very, very tender moments on that particular 26.2 miles.
Intimate.
In the heat of London, we called that.
We did, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I was blown away in 2018 just by the atmosphere and the sense of occasion. I didn't have much of a pull to do London, really, before. Mm. And I went back in 2021, and again, the crowds and the atmosphere was just absolutely electric, rocking, whatever you want to say. And same again this year. And it's all the way around. There's no a bit that you're feeling lonely on and stuff. So you're right into it. See, just before I get over the start line, John, I seen a lad with a Metro vest on, an Aberdeen Metro vest on, now I want to say, and he's seen me, and I had a Young Hearts Run Free buff on, Owl buff, and I had a Young Hearts Run Free sticker on my vest. And he must have clocked me and thought, that's that Stevie boy. And he just said to me, I love the podcast, I chuck some money in your fundraising. Now, thinking there was a few anonymous people put some money in my fundraising, and you struggle to say thank you to them. So I'm saying thank you to and now I think he said his name was Russell.
Yeah. Good lad, Russell.
I know. And I hope to hell he had a magical race as well. And I also saw my club mate, Virginia, just as she was away to cross the start line, and I was just in the same pen as her. I'd been looking out for her, I hadn't seen her, and I seen her just at a crucial moment, just as she was going to go over, and I got a good hug before and sent her on her way, which was a nice special moment too. And she did absolutely stunning, so fantastico. I'll take a bit of credit for that, for the pre-match cuddle.
Of course. You know what?
Isn't he? Russell Wilcox. Fundum.
Russell, I seen his name on socials over the weekend. So brilliant. Well done, Russell. Thank you very much for...
But you're then through the start line and you're right in Woolwich Arsenal you start heading for. And there's folk on their balconies, there's boys out with decks and music blaring. And
it's awesome, man.
Doing a bit of MCing and stuff. And it's a canny start in terms of adrenaline's going in. It's quite downhill, so it's easy to get carried away.
That's my next question on that. Did you feel you, for want of a better term, held yourself together?
I thought I was at the time, and then I looked at my first mile pace and I thought, what the fuck are you doing, son?
it's difficult, isn't it, because it's such a draw to move and you're feeling full of life. It's brilliant.
So. It was fine. And I felt, it was one of those ones where I wasn't feeling exerted. I wasn't puffing. And so that was cool. I just went with it. And then I just started kind of trying to keep it sensible after that. But I was probably a wee bit more fiery than I'd intended. And I maybe knew in the back of my mind I'd pay for it later.
Yeah. And 5-6 miles in, how were the legs? How was everything holding up?
good, man. That was our time. Well, it's Cutty's Arc, 6 miles, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is the first sort of big sight, the famous bit around the Cutty's Arc. And I was feeling all right. It was busy, man. It was so busy. I felt it was busier than any London I've ever done.
Do you mean the runners?
Oh, two of them. Aye.
Because they were talking, there was like, it was the most runners ever. They reckoned there was going to be 50,000 finishers for the first time. I don't know if they achieved that or not, but sure. it was a bigger crowd, I think.
It felt rammed, especially when the routes converged, you know, the blue and the red and the yellow converge, and it was just, you know, and for a while I was stuck behind the 320 pacer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was also thinking, this is an old bad place to be stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also felt that I wasn't running my own race because of it, and I couldn't really find a way past them because
there's too many people hanging about them.
Too many people, and to get past, you'd almost have to go in the danger zone beside the crowd where you could maybe trip up or something. Or, you know, there was some folk chancing it and flying down the side. And eventually at a corner or one of the roundabouts that you go around, I kind of was able to get in front of them, and I thought to myself, probably see them again, but I was then able to kind of get away for them, but that was like 8-9 miles in.
But would you maybe that benefited you though?
I don't know,
it might have later on. So next big landmark, Tower Bridge.
Tower Bridge, you'd run through Rotherhite and stuff, and it's like, you know, you look at a map and it's like maybe just, you know, the most salubrious part of London, you know, but again the crowds are out and the pubs are going.
Oh,
yeah, I love that, man. There's one pub you're on past, it's on the left hand side, and the whole pub's about bouncing up and down. They're gearing up for a right cracker or a Sunday sesh.
I remember going past some of the pubs, and some of them are playing 80s music, some of them are playing like ska stuff like Madness and all that, and folk are just going mental. And it's like 11:30 in the morning and they're just bouncing, man. It's brilliant.
I love it. So your fears spurned on through, you know, if you were just hearing that run on a regular Sunday morning, it would be a bit May, maybe.
Were the Rootbury Spinal Trust, were they across Tower Bridge? They're normally when you come across and turn right, were they there at that point?
No, they changed their tactics this year because they had quite a small team and stuff. So they were at mile 9.
Ah, okay.
That I saw Andy and Shaz.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they saw me rather because they were screaming my name and such like. And that gives you a good lift, doesn't it? And I was looking for them, I'm around about mile 9 now, and I was like, it was rammed because there must be a tube station near there that a lot of people get to see the runners to jump back on and get elsewhere and things like that. So I was so glad that I saw them, just kind of needed them then actually, because I was thinking, still 4 miles till Tower Bridge, which is the next sort of landmark in my head. So it helped tons. It was great to see them. But yeah, Tower Bridge is kind of then upon you before you know it.
And that's quite iconic going over there, isn't it?
On race day,
it's a magnificent structure anyway. It's quite, it's world famous. But to be doing it on race day, the runners going over it are all smiling and because they've got the cameras up at the top and they're all waving. But the crowd at the sides is quite phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's also a bit of a hill.
Aye. Yeah.
Bit of a hill. And I was spending the first half of Tower Bridge kind of grafting up the hill and then the second half of Tower Bridge posing like a silly prick. That's my
he's been with the camera. I've seen the photos.
So that was fine. But there's some photos caught me before I was actually in pose mode, and the photos aren't quite as eye catching.
You say go back, man.
Definitely. So that's cracking. That's a cracking part of the route. And it's half marathon as well. You know, just around about there. So you're kind of
what were you using to fuel? Map. I did see your Michael Flatley. What were you choosing to? What were you fueling with?
I was using Morton gels and active route.
How many Morton gels?
I had six at the ready. I ended up taking five. Couldn't take the sixth.
Okay. I don't know if I've ever asked this question before. Has Morton got flavour options, or is it just a Morton gel?
Just a Morton gel.
Right, okay.
It's almost, they say they're kind of almost flavourless, but I think they taste a bit like a sort of sweet maple syrupy type taste. It's quite nice, kind of neutral flavour. It's no overpowering, they're no super sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Can't use them to train on though, because I can't afford them.
How did you not take the six then?
Because I had some tummy issues.
Okay, we'll catch up with ourselves. We'll catch up with that later on.
You know, the signs at the side of a marathon are always quite funny, and there were some crackers, but I kept on seeing a recurring name that said "never trust a fart."
Never a truer word or phrase spoken to a runner.
I think the boy holding it was kind of following me along.
I love it, man.
And
all you want to do when you see a sign like that is have a big fart, but you can't do it. You can't do it. You're at a half marathon, still feeling good, legs are all right.
Half marathon, and I was all, read 1:36. All right.
Aye.
Content. It was probably, I think I said to myself, I'm at half marathon by 1:38. That's all right. You know, the day's going all right. So, it was maybe a wee bit quicker than I should have been running, given what I'd done for training. But I was also, I'm only a big believer in, you know, you get a wee bit of extra adrenaline on the day and a bit of extra bounce in your step just by being in the moment. And it's okay to hear that and know negative doubts to say you're running too fast. So I was all right with 1:36. It was solid. Oh, John, freaking of course, man. You come off Tower Bridge, you turn right, and you're just coming up to half marathon. And then on the other side of the road, the returning route of the marathon coming back for Canary Wharf towards so it's like miles sort of 13, 14 rub alongside miles 20, 21.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for that stretch. Yep. And just as I turned the corner, there was a lassie running down the elite. It's the elites, of course. And it was Anya Cullen, you know, the young English lassie who's taken a massive, massive hike up the improvement charts. And she was running it, wasn't she? So I went, the third time I've done this at London, went over to the left-hand side so that I'm beside. So I'm watching the elites at the other side just to watch them, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, go on yourself, Anya. You have a big smile back. Yeah. She's just running on her own. So that was a memorable moment. And then about 2 minutes later, the lead pack of men's guys, because I think they'd set off the women's, you know, first, and then the men's to try and stagger the finish times. The lead group of the men's races, the winner and Bekele as well, came running past, and you're thinking to yourself, that looks effortless. Wow. That
cruising, looks man.
Majestic. Cruising. Yeah. Majestic. And they're probably running it, you know, what, a pace that I can't run it at full pelt down a hill.
And then you've got a wee while till you get back there, eh?
Aye. You have.
The first time I was in London and did that, that was a sort of, there was quiet bits of the course there. Is it still the same? Is there quiet bits, less crowd? Or was the crowd there all the way around?
In my head, it was there all the way around.
Yeah.
Shouting, go on, Stevie boy. There was a lad who ran beside me for, I think, about 10 miles. And I've picked him up on my photographs as well, so I can now see why this was happening. He looked a wee bit like Jimmy Boulard, you know, the ex-footballer who's now on like Sky or something. He looked a bit like Jimmy Boulard, but he had Steve O on his vest written, so everybody was shouting, God, Steve O! And I was like, they're shouting at me. How did he get it? I've not got my name on my top. But he must have just been either to my side, behind me, just in front of me for like 10 miles, and he become my sort of little sort of pseudo pacemaker.
Maybe the universe delivered Steve-O to Stevie Boy, just to make it happen, man.
There was another sign that I saw, and it says there must have been somebody with a surname Watts with an S at the end, and it said Watts, you got the power.
Ah, that's clever. That's clever.
I was like, I'm taking that for myself. Thank you. So no, it wasn't really quiet, John. And then you go up, you go through the narrow street, the narrow street, and then you're into Iowa Dogs and mud shooting and whatnot. And that kind of floated by. I kind of got up to mile 18, kind of all right, and then you're at Canary Wharf.
Yeah,
that's a bit of a love hate thing, Canary Wharf. So, I know it's coming. One, your mile split score, the shot because of the high rise buildings and satellite getting lost and things like that. So you just ignore that. And I was thinking to myself at that point, next time I look at my splits at all, it's when I run past the 20 mile marker.
Yeah, so you're heading for the embankment by that time.
Well, you're just out of Canary Wharf. You're kind of taking the left. You're kind of coming up to Rainbow Row. Such around about 20. So I was like, the next time I look at my watch and with any kind of serious sort of idea, that's how I'm doing. I'll be at 20 miles. But Canary Wharf is just sensory overload, man. It's just like you're so glad to get out of it. And you get a bit disorientated because you take a few turns. A left and a right and a left, and the wind was coming between the buildings at some point. You're getting a wee headwind, wee tailwind, rah, music, bloody cheering, and it's all positive, but actually it's too much. You're getting a bit of a head spin.
But in each of the crowds of folk next to each other, you've got different charities that are lined up, and you've got people just to cheering. They're all trying to outdo each other with the noise, and it's just mental. It's like vuvuzelas at the World Cup. Remember that in South Africa? It's just like that constantly, man.
It gives me the same idea of that old couple who go to maybe a family birthday party or a wedding or something like that and sit too close to the band.
I know what you mean.
Or the DJ.
That's a very good analogy.
Where some people here are here to chat.
Can you turn that down
a wee bit? And I'm maybe the running equivalent of that at Canary Wharf. I'm like, this is nice, but everything just calmed down a couple of notches. So that's Canary Wharf. But anyway, I wangled my way out of there.
Yeah. And now you're no far off the home straight then when you're coming out of there. You're in the last 10K coming out of there. But you've mentioned Tommy.
Let's go. That's very, very appropriate. Yeah. So 20 miles. I get through 20 miles in like just under 2:30. So it's all right. So I had a really solid 20 mile run, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I got a sore tummy. And I've never had a sore tummy when I've been running, especially marathons, you know, times in an ultra marathon. Can you forgive your tummy for the passage of time that it kind of needs to, you run into the loo at some point, but never in a marathon. And I, for a couple of miles, I'm like, I need to go to the toilet. I think I do need to go to the toilet. And then toilets presented themselves to me. And I was like, right, I think if I wrote the toilet now, I could sort of save things. Whereas potentially I was Paula Radcliffe in.
Oh, right. Okay. So you've got to make decisions at some point.
Aye. And I just seen a sign 200 metres till the bogs. And I'm like, I'm in. Opened the first porta potty thing, porta loo. It was absolutely obliterated, John. It was like somebody had left like a can of shite and then exploded. I almost wanted to take my phone out and take a picture and send you. It was absolutely mind-boggling. And
this is the content people are here for.
It'll live with me, I think, till my dying day, to be honest, to be quite honest. So I found the next cubicle had been untainted, shall we say. So, yes, I made good use of the facility.
Okay.
And I was like, well, I stopped my watch. No, I better know.
What was the length of your pit stop? You're talking a minute, 90 seconds, something like
that? Aye, I'd say about 90 seconds. 90 seconds. And there was even toilet roll in there. It was all very quaint.
I'm thinking of the poor bugger that had left that toilet in that state, how they were feeling. Anyway, let's move on.
I'm glad to see I left it in a reasonable condition.
Good, that's good. And you feel did you feel a whole lot better instantly?
I did. I felt that it was the right thing to do. Although the same thing cropped up again at mile 24. So,
okay.
But it was maybe a 20 second stop.
Right. And what are you putting that down to? Is it the Morton gels?
I've used the Morton gels on my last four marathons with the issues. The thing that I did differently on Sunday, was it was sunny, so it was sweaty. And it was sunny and I was sweating a lot at Boston and it was chilly and I didn't have enough salts in me. So I took two of the salt sticks chew tabs.
Yep.
I took two of them. So I took a Morton gel every half hour and then I started taking the salt sticks at 45 minutes. So I took my first gel at half an hour. I took two salt tabs at 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And Morton gel at an hour. Salt tabs at an hour and 15. So 15 minutes kind of interchanging. So I'd taken eight of them by the time that this was it. After that, I couldn't take any more. The thought of a gel or salt chews and was turning my stomach. So
were you taking an alternative like off the stuff on the course or just you were done?
I was gritting it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, aye. We love a first, John.
Aye. But still, legs in that feeling all right?
Aye. Kind of quads and hips starting to get a bit achy. Crucially, Achilles were feeling all right. And I hadn't taken any pain relief at all. You know, paracetamol, say. Hadn't taken any. In fact, it was my drug. 3 PB.
There you go. We love a first. Brilliant.
Young Hearts, drug free.
Biggest,
legal.
Biggest challenge in the race, mental or physical?
Physical, I'd say. You know, I thought whether it was what happened with the Lou or something like that, but at mile 22-23. I still felt like there was a lot of work to do, a lot of steps, a lot of miles to cover. And I know it's only four. And I sometimes get to within 3 miles. And we spoke about the magnetic, you know, force of the finish line. And I wasn't feeling it. I was like struggling to find it. And I was feeling heavy legged and just gritting it out. And yeah, you can see that in my splits, you know, kind of falling off a cliff.
And I could be totally wrong with this. This is just a thought that's entered my head just now. And it's all relative to different runners, so it might be a bit stupid, but hey, I'm committed and I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
The pace that you were running at and the time you were finishing at, there's a lot of people finishing strong in there. Were you aware of that round about you? Yeah?
Aye. There was a mountain ran past me, so a boy dressed up as a mountain. He scampered past me at about mile 24, and then about mile 24 and a half, a boy carrying a road bike ran past me.
That's what you need, isn't it? To cheer you up.
Honestly. And they were looking sprightly and fresh, and I'm like, bastards. but also, I was doing that thing of proactively looking for people who were in a worse nick of me. So to spur me on. And there was plenty of folk in worse nick than me. You know, I was moving... no efficiently and stuff, but I was moving, you know, I wasn't stopped or walking or anything, and there was a lot of folk kind of stopped or over at the sidelines getting with hamstring cramps, and I'm like, ah, be near mate, that's a fucking nightmare. Then that way, just to get a bit of again, their soul, is our friend Debbie Martin Kinsani. I passed Debbie, sorry, I ran alongside Debbie I should say, at about mile 8, I'm like that. I recognise that gas cube best and the schwanks. And so I went up alongside and I says, your tan's looking cracking, Debs. Because it was. Her tan was spot on. So that was, you know, these little moments that you share with somebody who, you know, we've grown to love. So that was great.
An inspirational woman then. Honestly, yeah. And I seen Debbie had posted her photograph aside beside of her first marathon and her most recent one. I do want to find out what gutties she was wearing in that first photograph, but maybe we can ask her that at some point.
Gutties for the first one are now back in as a fashion trainer.
Well, she's always been a trailblazer.
Aye.
You know?
So she's kind of come back round. That's what all the young'uns are wearing to go out on a Saturday night now.
Right. I like that.
Me too. So I didn't care what your question was, but hopefully I've answered it.
That's cool, man. We're approaching Birdcage Walk.
Aye, we are.
We're approaching Birdcage Walk, which is like right angles to the mile, isn't it?
Yeah, so you have Big Ben in your sights for a while down the embankment and the London Eye, and you can kind of tell your progress along the embankment by the angle at the wheel of the eye. I was like, oh, I looked up and I saw like Big Ben and I thought it would just be there. And it was, honestly, I was like, you bastard, Big Ben, you are an absolute prick. Because it seemed like, I looked at my watch, that must be 2 miles away. So I must have been, you know, about 23 and a half thereabouts, you know, stuff. But anyway, I made my way. And then you turn right at Big Ben. And just before I turned right, big shout for the crowd, God, Stevie, what? And I'm like, it was Dave, our fix.
Ah, brilliant, man. Brilliant.
So he was meant to be running, couldn't he run, but he'd still made the trip for Australia just to support me. Not really. But it felt like it at the time for me. Yeah. It gave me a right boost. So I was so thankful with that. And then, yeah, you're up to Birdcage Walk, and then you're starting to get to the, you know, 800 metres to go. You're thinking twice around the athletics track. Pull yourself together, pal.
Aye. Prepare yourself for what's coming round that corner.
And I was thinking, right, there's 600 metres to go, right, kick for him now. Nothing. 385 metres to go. Come on. Went, nah, I'll wait till I'm just on the mile. And it wasn't until I got on the mile that I kind of, you know, it's like that's fine, that's about 250 yards to go. I'll empty the tank.
Some feeling though, man. Can you turn that corner? You go under, they've got a walkway, haven't they, for the pedestrians and spectators. You go under that sort of bridge as you go around that corner, and there's a finish right ahead of you. It's an iconic street as well. What are you thinking then? What are you feeling?
I was just like, get me underneath that finish line gantry, get me out of here, get me to the boozer. That's what I was thinking.
Were you aware of your progression PB?
No, I purposely put I didn't care if I actually physically did it and put my buff over my watch.
Okay.
But I was just like, let's just fucking grind this out. I couldn't have given a fuck about my progression PB, to be honest, at that stage. And then I stopped my watch when I got on the line, and it was 3:22:29 or something like that. And then my official time come through. I think I'd started my watch just that wee bit early, just to give me a wee weird buffer in my head. So I was tense. I did clock it at the time when I pressed stop, that I just by a very smidge beating the time in Malaga.
Brilliant.
And that was that. And I felt a wee bit sick when I crossed the finish line, if I'm being honest. I felt that I could have just went over at the barriers and joined the masses spewing, because I certainly wasn't alone in that feeling. But I just kept on walking. They've really streamlined the finish process, John. So you get a medal, a blanket, kind of space blanket, foil blanket, and I bought a look and said, that's it, nothing else now at the finish line. You get your t-shirt at the expo now before the race, so they've kind of, that's fallen in line with, you know, Boston, Chicago, New York, etc. So it's just pretty quick, and baggage trucks there, get your bag that you've just dropped in and get got warmed up, because it got immediately pretty chilly when you stopped running.
Speak to me about the medal. We like a medal here in Young Hearts Run Free. Speak to me about the London medal.
It's weighty.
Mm.
Is that an okay term of
definitely?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. It's weighty. It's like when you get that really good filled roll for your favourite place and you walk away with it with just that wee feeling of satisfaction that you're away to scran this big, weighty, filled roll.
A macaroni pie for Simon Howie and Ochterarders like that. That's a weighty pie.
Aye. And you're walking back to the car with it thinking to yourself, you're kind of a wee bit excited.
It's like double joy. Mm-hmm. The joy of holding it. You've also got the joy of eating it. So, weighty is a very good expression.
Okay, so the medal's weighty. Impressive. I think it's an impressive medal. Not my favourite, but it's kind of up there. It's a cracker.
Good. That's good. That's always good. Then it's sometimes a challenge when you finish meeting up with your pals.
Yes.
Different times. It's a busy place. Was that all coordinated?
It was. Planned? It was. We had decided to meet in a pub just off Trafalgar Square, which is quite close by, just bottom of the mall. And it's rammed. As soon as you get out of the runner's funnel and then if we are folk are waiting to meet their loved ones, etc., it's rammed. Yeah. It's so, so busy. It's just it's pretty incredible. So I met Jerry Healy and Paul Stoddart in the Theodore Bullfrog.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and they'd go to a table. Imagine that.
Listen, you could take the boys out of Cumbernauld, can't you know what I mean? But that's brilliant. They must have known Jerry was coming.
They must have done. They must have. They probably had a reserved for him. And you got a free pint of beer with your medal.
The planets are aligning, man.
And then John Gasparini, he was also with us as well. He finished no far behind me at all. And I seen him whilst I was still kind of semi coming round in the finishing funnel bit area. So me and him were able to kind of grab our bags and walk to the pub for the real festivities to begin.
Well done to John as well. He was also running for Root Bry Spinal Trust. I know he had to tough it out at the end. He was it his calf? He was bothering him?
Yeah, about 22 miles or so in his calf. And until then, he'd ran it like absolute clockwork, man.
Yeah.
He'd ran it. So I was partly disappointed for him because I know that there is something pretty special in there for John. But I was also impressed by the way that he hung on in there despite the adversity.
Yeah, well done. And that's something special that's still to come. That's still
exactly,
to come.
Exactly. And there's been fight and talk about that already. So
love it.
Love that.
Love it.
Yeah.
So recovery mode, rehydration mode. What was yours? Oh, actually, I know, because I eventually seen a photograph of a meal. It was on the Monday, actually, of a meal in an Indian restaurant. Is that correct?
That is correct. So we went to that pub first. Debbie then came in to say hello.
Ah, brilliant.
With a new Wild Heart Runner fucking Legends t-shirt on.
Yeah, brilliant. Very smart.
What a treat that was. So that was good. And then we quickly scampered round to another pub nearby where RST, the Root Bry Spinal Trust, were having a quick meet-up. Checked in with them, checked in with other runners, got a good few photos. It was a good, I don't know, must have been, it was probably near an hour, but in my head it was 10 minutes, but I think it was about an hour. It was great. And then we headed for Brick Lane in London, which is famed for its curry houses.
I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, Brick Lane, John. It's also a bit alternative scene there. More on that later. And we went to and we had like a real curry banquet. It's BYOB as well.
Oh, brilliant, man. Fantastic.
I can see your jealousy levels of just
I'm salivating thinking about it.
Aye.
And I'm still flummoxed why Stoddy's sent me an empty plate and everybody else's plate is laden. Maybe just a gentleman that way.
Well, I think all our scran had come, and Paul is a vegetarian, so he was waiting on some kind of paneer curry thing.
Wasn't it help yourself carry on in the middle?
No, well, we'd all ordered different things so that we could almost make it a bit of a sort of buffet. Oh, but Paul,
dodgy doing that, man.
I know. But Paul was obviously no involved in it, and I didn't take my spoon that had been in meat and take his out. Honestly, Paul, I didn't do that. Trot infection type thing. So that was rare. And then we just visited a few hostelries round by, and that was a good crack. It didn't get too messy, just enough, you know, just at that sweet spot.
Aye. Another good night out with your pals.
Fantastic. That's what it's all about, John.
Of course it is. Socialising, making the world a better place through love and running and Indian food. Rootbrai Spinal Trust, you reached your target, your fundraising target. So thank you everybody that's chipped in there, yes?
Absolutely. I managed to raise, I think I'm sitting at £570. And there's been all sorts of generous donations, and I'm trying to get round to replying and thanking everybody who did it, but I'm also conscious that I've got quite a bit on my plate now. So I just want to put a broad brush one out there saying that it's appreciated by the charity and by me, and all the little messages I got before, during, because they were popping up on my watch that I forgot to turn off the Bluetooth on, but I was kind of glad that I did in the end, because the messages were nice and distracting and supportive. And then afterwards as well, I've got a ton of quality messages. So your plea for people to send me a message was there's a call to arms that people took up and appreciated it. And I'm only sorry that I've not been able to reply to everybody individually.
But then you've just done what you've just done. You didn't hate to do that, you know. But thank you for everybody that sent the message and continue to send the message. Continue to do that. If your pals are out there doing something, batter in and send that good vibe. Stephen's fundraising will still be open for a wee while yet. So
it sure will. Yep.
You know.
Yep. Yeah, if you want to throw a few quid in, it would be absolutely welcome by the charity and by me, of course. But the charity is a small charity, and they work tirelessly, and they're, at the end of the day, they're good folk.
They're
good people, and that is what probably draws me back to them, the fact that they're just appreciative, good folk.
And there's also the small matter of prizes money can't buy t-shirt to be won. Everybody that puts a donation in to Stephen's fundraising efforts, their name will go on the big wheel. Ooh. And we will spin that wheel probably mid-May, something like that. We'll get a few weeks, and then we'll spin that, and we'll get that t-shirt to you, whoever that lucky winner shall be.
That's a wee bonus, Brucey bonus.
Definitely. So, lessons learned for London.
I don't know if there's any new lessons learned. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I should have taken those salt tablets. I've tried them before, but maybe know the volume of them. But I also looked at the volume of them and thought it wasn't OTT what it was doing, over the top, sorry. So, if my lessons are that we'd maybe be to try and go out a wee bit of at a pace that I could sustain, but then at the end of the day, I'd have then been annoyed with myself if I got to 20 miles feeling fine. And it's a wee bit of me going out with a wee bit of intent, so that I maybe wasn't quite there in terms of, probably my endurance was there, but my ground speed's kind of been quelled by my Achilles niggles. And I've no been doing consistent sort of speed work. So maybe I could have went out a wee bit more conservatively.
I have to ask this. We ask all our guests, what's next for Stevie Boy?
What's next? What is next? There's the lap in Windermere is next in September.
Cool.
And that's a different.
And that'll come at us before we know it, man.
Totally. You know? No. Yeah. It's passing the baton over event wise to my ever supportive wife Fiona now, who has got a big challenge coming up. So this is almost my turn to step back into the shadows.
Good luck in that, yeah. Okay. Right. Well, you know what?
So
I think I can wholeheartedly say, on behalf of all the listeners, and they're more than free to chuck in a message to either this episode or on our socials to say, well done, Stephen, or send Stephen a direct message, whatever suits your fancy. Even send us an email, youngheartsrunfreepodcast@gmail.com. You can do that if you wish.
Yeah.
But a wholehearted, massive kudos and well done. Progression PB continues, baby.
Mm-hmm. We're on the roll. John, bring on Tokyo, man. It's
exactly.
It's coming. And my last words will be, like, I was a bit sceptical, as I said, about ever doing London, ever. It was never something that was really, really attractive for me. I was like, too many people, you know, running around London. There's not even a city that I've got a big, massive love for or anything like that. London Marathon brings out the very, very best of London. Jerry, my pal, said that number of times, and I agree wholeheartedly. If you're a runner and you've got an aspiration at ever doing a marathon, try and go and do London. I urge you to try and do London for the sense of occasion, the community, people, power feel, and just how amazing you'll feel looking back at the experience, even if during it's tough and you hate to tough it out, it really is something that is really something to treasure. So get in about it. And I came back home on Monday, John, on the train, a few cans, right? And I got back into the house and my daughter Isla was there and she wanted to see my medal and she said, Dad, I want to run the London Marathon.
Oh man, that's powerful stuff. Eh? Fantastic.
Yeah, first wee glimmer of that. So I was 11.
Oh, it's the brilliant man. Joy, I love that.
I can hang up my bits, as we say.
Have you got a song? Have you got a London song?
I do. I knew you were going to ask this. And it's a song that wasn't hugely on my radar until I was doing a wee post-marathon Insta post and I was looking for a suitable song that wasn't a London calling. Or The Trap, you know, the London Marathon.
Yeah.
Theme music. Well, that gets you going. I maybe hate to add that in a playlist anyway. But my song, it's got a London connection. It's the Libertines, Run, Run, Run.
I heard it on your Insta story. It's a belter of a tune. Well done on the Insta post as well, by the way. Very well manufactured. The Insta reel. Is it you did Jerry's for him?
No, it was totally Jerry's work.
Was it Jerry? Did Jerry do that himself?
Holy man, you've been in a masterclass.
You must have been. Very good, very arty. Very arty, yeah. And very good. So, And I was liking all the London. I liked that wee play on words as well. That was
on the t-shirt, to be fair. So
I see.
Lifted and shifted.
Yes.
As they say.
That's it, man. Well, listen, well done, man. We will add in that that track. Any final words?
I just want to say a massive, massive, massive good luck to my big pal John doing the fling this weekend. This is a guy that I've known for a few years. I've done almost 200 podcast episodes with him and he is amazing and he'll hear an awesome experience. And if you see him, he'll have stickers in his pocket. So tap him up for some. And if you also are doing the fling or you're supporting it or you're marshalling it, a fantastic Saturday. It's one of the most special days on the running calendar. Have fun.
It's a lifelong project of a life on the lash. I've forgotten how to care, but I'll remember for cash. It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. Light the fuse, sing the blues, I can die if I want to. Tonight we're gonna bring tomorrow's happiness. Gonna live like it's the end. I love you to death, but I must suggest guy's stand. He could eat more chicken, any man in the land. Well, I'll give her up caring for happiness. When his heart gives out, it's where I rest. Run, 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 boy, faster than the past, through the looking glass. If you want the night to last, tomorrow's happiness.